Welcome to More Life, the Reentry Podcast.
Welcome back to another episode of More Life, the Reentry Podcast.
After we are bringing you another episode in our season,
Vinkevia Gardner.
Civic Redemption, empowering the
each week, we bring you powerful interviews.
On today's episode, we are going to be diving more into the research
findings
on civic engagement.
Our
and
mission
activism
is to bridge the gap between scholarly insights and personal
and
stories
how that social
by shedding light on the challenges and triumphs faced by formerly incarcerated individuals.
So for our conversation today, we have
explored the latest research,
Dr. Justin Smith,
policies,
who has studied and
taught
classes on sociology
also
and criminology over the past few
from those
years.
Who've been impacted.
His current research actually
Join
focuses
us
on prisons
as we uncover
and civic
the realities
engagement
of
among formerly incarcerated individuals, and he has experience teaching the Inside Out Prison
Whether you're
Exchange
a professional working in
at
the
Central
legal
Michigan
system,
University.
A family member,
Dr. Smith, I am very grateful for you
someone
joining
navigating
us today to have this
reentry
conversation.
Yourself.
More
Life, the Reentry Podcast is here to inform,
Thank you.
Inspire,
well, first, I wanna,
and ignite change.
You know, jumping right into our conversation, before we get more into what your research focuses on, can you define to us what civic engagement means?
Yeah, so for me, it's broad. So you could start with voting, of course, but there's far more than that. In terms of what I've studied and worked alongside people doing is civic engagement in two ways, activism and advocacy. So the activism piece is more of the organizing, particularly around criminal justice reform and prison reform specifically. So doing some organizing events, conferencing, training others to be activists, meeting with legislators and policy makers. So that's more of the activism piece. So that's a big part of what I've been involved with and what I've researched and spoken to people about. Then there's also an advocacy piece, which is more of an individual level type of work where you might be mentoring other people. In this case, you know, formerly incarcerated people, mentoring those that are more recently coming back to the community, or mentoring those that are still inside. And advocacy in terms of maybe conflict resolution or maybe addiction recovery. So that there's a few examples there. And so when I'm studying and getting involved in the work around those issues, that's more or less how I speak of it. And again, of course, the political piece and the voting is one end of it. But as my collaborators say, that is just the very beginning. When we talk about civic engagement, it's more of those other community involved types of actions as well.
Yes, I like that point. I think that's a point that's been emphasized throughout this season, and that it goes beyond just voting. And it's civic engagement really encompasses these things that you're talking about here, advocacy, activism. There's different levels to which people could be civically involved. I know for people that are formerly incarcerated or that are system impacted, there could be some barriers to them voting in some states, depending on where they live at. Is there, I guess, how would you define civic engagement in the context for people who may have been incarcerated? I guess, can you explain a little bit more of what that would look like for people who, once they are released, if they don't have the right to vote?
Right. Whether you have the right to vote or not, what I have seen and what I've participated with alongside people are those formerly incarcerated folks who are leaders and participants in criminal justice reform. So I hope this addresses what you're asking. So this started, some of my work has started when I was involved in a lot of prison reform actions. And what I started to see was a lot of the leaders were people who had been inside sometimes for decades, and also, of course, their families, which plenty of other research has shown similar things. So the type of work that formerly incarcerated activists have been doing, you know, leading these community organizations, leading rallies or public speaking forums and things of that nature, maybe public speaking on college campuses, for example. So there's a number of ways that people have gotten civically engaged, whether they can vote or not. Of course, there's barriers, which, you know, I think you were kind of alluding to, and we can talk about those. There's a number of barriers, and for example, just stigma. You know, a lot of folks that I've worked with will speak about how they oftentimes struggled, at least their early parts of coming back to the community, was the stigma that carried, and, you know, deciding whether or not they tell people that they were incarcerated and in what situations they felt relatively comfortable to do so, and how that is an ongoing process.
Yeah, that's one barrier that we have definitely talked about, especially throughout this season, is just this idea of stigma. And people may not be as comfortable with sharing that particular aspect of their life with individuals. Well, I know in some of your research, you've talked about this idea of carceral citizenship. Can you explain to us what that means and your research related to that?
Yeah, carceral citizenship. And by the way, this is not a term that I conceptualized, but I do think it's very useful. Carceral citizenship is a concept developed by Reuben Miller, professor, who's done a lot of great work in this area. And they really define it as a different type of citizenship. So having, you know, having a criminal record, for example, or a history of incarceration, defines one's citizenship in different ways, limiting them, not only in voting and civic engagement, but of course around how much surveillance they're subjected to, and limiting the right to employment, the right to housing, and the list goes on in terms of those collateral consequences that oftentimes carry with people with criminal records. So if we define what is citizenship, which again is connected to civic engagement and all of that, we see from Reuben Miller's work and his colleagues that, you know, that there's thousands of laws across the country that define citizenship differently with, especially if you have a felony and been locked up in prison.
Okay, so what are some insights that you have gained from your research on the connection between civic engagement and recidivism?
Yeah, I think I'd like to start answering that by talking a little bit about my direct involvement again with a lot of prison reform actions. And so I got involved with that simply to be civically engaged myself. So prior to that, I did, you know, social science research on mass incarceration and race and incarceration rates and so forth. And then just as my own civic engagement, again, I started to get involved with community organizations that were trying to address some of the issues around prisons and mass incarceration and so forth. And so with that, the more events I showed up to, whether it was like going to meet legislators or other public forums, like I was mentioning before, I started to see that, you know, a lot of the folks leading the way were people who had done time in prison. And so I said, okay, well, and then some of them suggested to me that I should, you know, start interviewing a lot of folks. And I said, okay, so I started to do that. And so then I formulated a more systematic analysis through interviews. You know, now we have several dozen interviews with formerly incarcerated activists. And yeah, again, to address your question, what have I found? I've found that formerly incarcerated activists really teach each other through a generative process how to effectively tell their stories. So storytelling is a big piece of this. So to be able to tell your story of redemption, for example, or how to deal with that stigma. You know, we were mentioning stigma before, and how do you manage that stigma by telling your story of redemption, and how giving back to the community, whether it's through the advocacy piece, like helping others reenter society from prison, or being active in congressional hearings, which a lot of the folks I've spoken to are. So you name it, you know, helping the collective group or helping the individuals, helping people on an individual level is really a collective experience for a lot of formerly incarcerated activists. So there's more and more groups, you know, there's more and more groups that are helping those that have histories of incarceration or criminal records or their family members tell stories. So it's really this, again, there's a term called generativity that I like to use. Generativity being how you pass along your knowledge and skills to the next generation. And so you see a lot of generative work amongst people who are active and trying to address prison reform issues. And it really, a lot of it starts in prison, you know, so whether it's fighting cases while incarcerated or trying to file grievances or work for the rights of people who are incarcerated while they're inside. So it kind of begins oftentimes inside, and then these, you know, formerly incarcerated people who are leaders in reform movements, you know, continue to do that work outside. So those are some of the things I find. And it's really, what's interesting is, you know, if you look at most research, it says that, you know, contact with criminal justice institutions, whether it's getting stopped or arrested or incarcerated, tends to reduce one's likelihood to be civically engaged for the general public. But there are some select few who, it's not that few, there's thousands of people across the country, but while generally most of the research shows that, you know, having a history of incarceration, you're less likely to then vote or gain a, or join a community organization to be politically active. There's some who it really, you know, charges them to get involved, which is not really surprising. This is nothing new necessarily. You know, we see that criminal justice interactions are ones that really generate, you know, social activism. So yeah, those are some of the main things that have come out with the studies that we've done.
Yeah, I wonder if you could talk to us a little bit more too about what are some of the benefits of social activism for formerly incarcerated individuals that you've seen in your work or that they've discussed?
Yeah, good question. I like that. When I speak with folks and then kind of analyze the interviews and just hearing them talk, you know, it can give folks one way to give back. You know, giving back, it makes pretty much all of us feel good, doesn't it? You know, like to know that you have an experience or to share a skill, or, you know, if you're have firsthand direct experience, then you can speak to that and be able to give that knowledge and story back to the community to help others. That tends to make people give some meaning and make people feel worthy, which is oftentimes taken away from you or diminished if you're in prison for a while. So yeah, it can not only, you know, I would argue, and folks have told me straight up that you know, it gives them a sense of worth and to give back to the community when there might not be a whole lot of other, you know, work options, for example.
So it definitely seems like that sense of identity, that sense of, you know, giving back to their community and fostering this worthiness almost is what it sounds like.
That's what I hear when I speak with people.
So I know that research also shows that people who are impacted by the system or have a felony conviction, when they become civically involved, they are less likely to return to prison, jail, or criminal justice involvement.
Right.
What do you think actually, is it the civic activities that actually influence that, or is it the social connection between those that they are interacting with?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know if I have the answer to that one. I really wouldn't say I have an answer to that, but I mean, we can talk about that. You know, I mean, I think having a sense of worthiness or a connection to the community, you know, that helps folks helps folks. And also, but one thing I will say, a lot of the folks that I've worked with oftentimes were incarcerated for so long that, you know, they had a lot of transformation. So it kind of comes together, you know, transforming mindsets and, you know, their life goals, the trajectories. They sometimes were incarcerated for long enough to where things really changed. So their civic engagement is just part of that process. So don't know if you could go as far as say that, you know, civic engagement then causes one to desist from criminal behavior, but, you know, I think it might be part of this, of a similar process. And also, like, speaking of that, you know, a lot of folks that I worked with, some of them, you know, were not, you know, were convicted of crimes that they, you know, didn't commit, or it was complicated. And maybe they committed just one act. It wasn't like a lot of them were living a life of like highly involved in criminal behavior too. So what I haven't necessarily focused so much on like the desistance from crime piece, but it's more about, you know, how folks get civically involved, civically engaged. I hope that makes sense.
Yeah, I think you've shared that with us. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense to me of like a lot of your research is focusing on what they can do to become civically involved and what that may look like for them. So if that's getting involved while they're incarcerated to when they leave the system and come into their communities, they can get involved in organizations that may be local. And that's how they can become more civically involved is what I've understood of what your research has been surrounded around.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, there's several organizations. I mean, it's hard perhaps if you're in a rural area, mm-hmm. but in most cities, there's, from what I know, a lot of cities have at least some organization that works on these issues. So there are options, and especially, again, if you're living in a metropolitan area.
How can lawmakers and community leaders create more inclusive environments for justice involved people to be involved?
Yeah, good question. I mean, some of this has started because of the work that activists have done and policymakers have been receptive to, is that including people to have a, you know, quote unquote, like seat at the table. So that's one thing that happens. And that's not a something that's going to solve every issue, of course, but to have decision-making conversations is important. So, for example, in Michigan, they had a task force several years ago about jails and prisons, and they had like, I don't know, I want to say 18 members of that task force roughly. And there was a few folks who were formerly incarcerated and a few folks who were, you know, had experiences firsthand or secondhand. And that was important. That's important, I would say, to have people with direct experience, to have that place at the table. So that's certainly one. And then from the research, you know, it certainly shows that getting rid of a lot of barriers to civic engagement is important. Again, whether that's voting or, you know, getting involved in community, you know, not relying so much on the faulty criminal records that we use more and more. So that can really exclude people and continue a lot of the stigmas that go on.
And in your research and experience in working with people, what barriers have you noted that people formerly incarcerated have said, these are barriers for me becoming civically mm-hmm. involved?
Yeah. So a lot of it is just the informal stigma, you know, just the, when do you tell people that you've had, that you've been to prison? And a lot of folks that are now leaders in community activism have gone through that, and but still have to deal with it as well. So it can be kind of a ongoing tricky situation. Especially when you're in formal settings with decision makers or community members, you know, how much do you disclose about your history? And again, some people use that story as an asset, right? As a strength, as a story of redemption, for example, about how folks that have been convicted of some pretty serious crimes can come back and be civically engaged and have a lot of assets to give back to their community. So that can be a very powerful story that about overcoming those barriers. And other barriers are the ones that, you know, if you read any research on this, you know, the ability to work, that can be very difficult. So a lot of civic engagement is paid civic engagement too. So a lot of folks I've worked with, it's either part or all of their job to be part of an organization, oftentimes nonprofits that seek to help the community in a number of ways or seek to change laws around criminal justice particularly. But so oftentimes that, you know, just being able to work is a huge barrier. Not, you know, oftentimes not having the time to commit to being involved in the community, that, you know, just sheer time can be hard for anybody. And then especially if you're, you know, scrambling to find decent work.
So thinking about the future, what role do you see social activism among formerly incarcerated individuals playing in the broader efforts towards criminal justice reform?
Yeah, I think it looks to me like it's going to continue. More and more organizations, whether it's, you know, Just Leadership USA or All of Us or None or several other organizations across the country, have really developed energy and momentum, spreading the training and skill development and storytelling and policy advocacy amongst people with histories of incarceration and their families. And so it continues to grow. And again, this is not super new. I mean, I was just reading, you know, John Irwin is an academic, but with a history of incarceration. And he was leader of this writing back in the 60s and 70s on this stuff and about how prisoners' rights movements have been, you know, going on for decades. But there seemed to be something happening, and this is not my idea, but, and again, in speaking with people really involved in criminal justice reform and prison reform specifically, is that, you know, the publication of The New Jim Crow by Michelle Alexander and subsequent work really ignited a lot of public consciousness around mass incarceration and race and issues of prisons more generally across the country. So with that, over the last decade or so, you've started to see a growth in the organization, particularly addressing prison issues.
Yeah, that book has definitely sparked some conversations, and I've seen more conversations after that book. And Ava, can never say her last name, but Ava
DuVernay.
Yes, in her documentary 13th, some very interesting conversations that I have heard too. Yeah. So, but yeah, thank you for bringing that up. And I will make sure I put that in the description box for people to be able to look at if they don't know about that book and they want to start their search or research on understanding some of these things that we're talking about here today. I do want to ask you, is there anything that you feel like is really important for our audience members to understand when it comes to social activism, civic engagement among formerly incarcerated individuals?
I think we've talked a lot about the major threads that I see in my work. Again, I think like we were talking about before we started recording, the bridging of research with personal experience seems to be very important. You know, using one without the other is probably not the more effective way to go about trying to change change laws and change policies and change the lives of people affected by the system. You know, it's important to hear people's firsthand experiences and their stories to get a real picture of what's happened to people and what continues to happen to people. Then, of course, it's also important to look at the data. I guess I'm biased because I'm a researcher and academic, but to look at what the data actually say too, and look at the nuances of that and the realities of it, So I think you started our conversation by saying talking about the importance of bridging that firsthand personal experience with research as well. So I think that's a key takeaway, and it's important to work with that. And I think you see that in a lot of the trainings amongst activists and advocates, is that yes, they have folks have firsthand experience. And for many, you know, years and years of it, that continues. But then also being able to interpret that with, you know, what the broader data say as well.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's just really important to have both of those, because I think, like you say, you can't have one without the other. The data is important for us to look at as well, but it's also very important for us to integrate the lived experiences of those who are impacted. So I think that's a thing that we will continue to see, and I hope we will continue to see. I do want to ask, because I know earlier you mentioned that there are some individuals who are not civically involved. How can we encourage those individuals who are system impacted and have yet to become civically involved, or may even have some reluctance or fear about becoming civically involved? How can we encourage those individuals?
Ooh, that's a tough one. I think a lot of the organizations are currently doing that in a way. So though people working on that, I'm sure have a better answer than I do, but I'll try to get at that. What I've seen is, again, leaders in the activists and advocacy movements, if you want to call it that, go do community outreach, and they speak to folks about what is possible, and what is possible both in terms of, you know, being able to tell your own story, but then also, like, change is possible. Changes have been made, sometimes not very fast, and it can take years and years, and change can be, you know, pretty small on some levels. But that's what folks are doing with a lot of these organizations, is are going out having community meetings with, whether it's religious groups or neighborhood groups or schools, you know, reaching out to folks, that trying to connect with people that have gone through the criminal justice system and incarceration. But yeah, I mean, it also makes sense if people, you know, might not want to get engaged too. I mean, that's understandable anyways, you know, when, although, yeah, maybe it's best to kind of drum up that civic engagement, but it makes some sense why people may not want to as well.
Well, thank you for that. And before we leave for this episode today, what is one thing you want our audience to remember about our discussion?
I try to resist the stigma that carries along with people and how that gets in the way of people living their life, you know, the way they want to. And so whether that's, you know, the laws that stigmatize us, or just kind of the informal ways we stigmatize each other, that's one important thing that I think a lot of activists are trying to do is show that, you know, people can be redeemed. People that have done some harm to other people can be redeemed, and, you know, that redemption is certainly possible.
I think that's a good message to end off on, is redemption is certainly possible. So I thank you, Dr. Smith, for joining us today and for us having this conversation.
I appreciate it.
All right. Well, you all, if you want to learn more about Dr. Smith's work, or just social activism that is happening among formerly incarcerated individuals, I will make sure that I put information in the description box for you, so you can have that and you can do all the learning that you would like to do and see how you could get involved as well. We thank you for listening today, and this is More Life, the Reentry Podcast, signing off. Thank you for joining us on this episode of More Life, the Reentry Podcast. We hope today's conversation has provided valuable insights and inspiration for your own journey or the work you're doing to support reentry. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe, rate, and review our podcast. Your feedback helps us reach more listeners and continue to bring you powerful stories and expert opinions. For more resources, updates, and to connect with our community, please follow us on Instagram and Facebook at More Life The Reentry Podcast. If you have any questions, suggestions, or would like to share your own story, feel free to reach out to us at the email provided in the description box. Remember, reentry is a journey, and together we can make a difference. Until next time, stay inspired, stay informed, and keep moving forward. This is More Life, the Reentry Podcast, signing off. The content shared on More Life, the Reentry Podcast, is for informational and educational purposes only. The views expressed by guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of the podcast. While we strive for accuracy, content may be based on research, personal experiences, or opinions. Research is subject to change as new data emerges, and content may also vary from person to person. This podcast does not provide professional advice or recommendations. Listeners should consult with appropriate professionals for guidance. Please note that some discussions may also have sensitive topics, therefore listener discretion is advised. This episode of More Life, the Reentry Podcast is funded by the Paul Simon Democracy Award. We thank you for supporting our mission to bridge the gap between scholarly insights and lived experiences.